This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And good evening and welcome to another wonderful episode of Spirit Lounge. Good evening, Rachel.
Good evening.
And good evening, Tao.
Good evening.
You pressed those buttons so well there,
Oh,
Tao.
I'd like to press everyone's buttons.
Oh, please. Big thanks to Michelle from Stand Up Straight for another wonderful program. Well, I know I say that, but I actually don't get to listen because I'm preparing. But I'm sure it was if I was listening. Tonight we're talking about polyamory. And when I spoke to a few people this week and said, they asked what we're talking about, and I told them it was polyamory, they looked at me blankly and they said, "What is that?" So I hope you're all listening because you're going to find out. And our first guest tonight is going to help us. Teach us what is polyamory. So, she's a passionate relationship educator, coach, and facilitator. She's been polyamorous for over 2 decades and enjoys one of the most fabulous long-term stable poly groups she knows of. She's co-founder of PolyVic, Melbourne's polyamorous community, and has been significantly involved in the development of the wider poly community in Australia. She's facilitated and participated in numerous workshops, focus groups, panels, and discussion groups about polyamory throughout Australia. Welcome to Spirit Lounge, Anne Hunter.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
Anne, how did you go from being brought up as a conservative Baptist to becoming a polyamorist?
That is such a great question. It was through experience. It was through falling in love with somebody who was married when we were both good Christians. And we did the good Christian thing of stopping seeing each other and could not change the depth of feeling that got opened up between us. And we never had a sexual affair, but boy, it felt like an emotional affair. And I did everything I could think of to try to change how I felt, and I couldn't actually change how I felt, which really surprised me. I thought that I'd just, you know, if I was determined, I could get over it. So when I came out of my own marriage and his marriage broke up and we got together, I, first of all, did not ever want to promise anything, make any vows that I wasn't sure I could keep.
Right.
That was the first thing. And also, that happened at a very difficult time in my life when I was actually in the process of leaving the church through the issue of clergy sexual assault, which was terribly traumatic and, you know, it was really unpleasant. And this relationship was one of the few things that gave me deep joy at that time. And I thought, not only did I not want to limit my own potential for that kind of joy in future, but if my partner was to meet somebody that brought them that kind of joy, and I love my partner, why would I want to stop that for them as well? So we didn't have a word for it when we first started being non-monogamous. We were just not being monogamous. It took us 5 years to get the word.
So what exactly is polyamory then?
Yeah, polyamory comes from the two roots, poly meaning many and amor meaning love. So it's many loves or many loving. It's the practice of multiple ethical caring relationships where everybody knows about it and is a genuinely happy consenting member to the arrangement.
I think I saw it described on the website as ethical non-monogamy. Would that be?
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of different phrases. You'll see non-monogamy basically means everything that's not monogamy. That includes cheating, though, where, you know, which is dishonest, and swinging, where the emphasis is on sex. In polyamory, the emphasis is on the emotional connection. So poly relationships often are sexual, and there are certainly people who are in their expression of their polyamory is that, you know, they love lots of sexual connections with lots of different people, but they're always very honest about what they're offering and not offering. They're always, there's always care involved in all of their connections. They'll always take no for an answer, all that sort of stuff. At the other end of the spectrum, you get polyfidelity, which is like group marriage, where people actually stay committed to each other for life and don't engage with people outside the group. And it can look like so many different things.
Do people ever assume that you are polygamous?
Yes.
And do people mistake polyamory and polygamy very often?
So polyamory, there are a lot of myths about it. One of the biggest ones is that it's all about sex and that it's unethical, that it's selfish, that you, it means you can't commit, stuff like that. It's often misunderstood as cheating. It's the same as sleeping around. It's the same as swinging. It's, you know, again, just about the sex. And it's often mistaken for polygamy as well.
And suddenly they're like, oh, you're a sister wife of
And there are some people who use those terms, but the difference with polyamory, between that and polygamy, is that with polygamy it's usually one person who has many spouses, and those spouses are not allowed to have multiple spouses of their own. Whereas in polyamory, everybody is free to choose what kind of relationship structure works best for them, and then to see where they intersect with other people and where, you know, what works for the people they connect with.
And with polygamy, it's normally a male with lots of wives who run around and meet their every need.
Religious polygamy, yes, is usually one man and multiple women. There have been some cases of polyandry with one woman and multiple men. Less likely to be religious, though, in that case.
What is the difference, Anne, between polyamory and an open relationship?
That's such a good question. And that, open relationship I find to be a very amorphous term that I'm at the point now where when anybody uses that term, I ask them what they mean by it. On the whole, it tends to mean that people are in a couple where the couple is kind of the main relationship, and they have some form of connection outside. Sometimes it means they just have sex with people outside. They don't have emotional commitment. Sometimes it means they can fall in love, but they don't have sex. It can mean so many different things, I find, with open relationship. So there's a very, very big crossover between open relationship and polyamory. The main difference, I think, would be that the couple-centric nature of it, polyamory often isn't couple-centred. So there, especially with younger people now, you find people are developing what you might call friendship networks with very fluid relationships that might move in and out of being sexual or romantic or, you know, different levels of intimacy, but have a very solid friendship basis, and they will not sort of see themselves as being couple-oriented particularly.
So it's almost just like dating.
There's
a deeper connection.
There's generally, again, it depends on the person. The thing with polyamory that I love is that it's so fluid, and it really invites you to ask yourself the question, what do I want? What do I really want? What works for me? So there are some people who, you know, there are plenty of people who do have a couple relationship with what they would call a primary relationship, and the other relationships are not allowed to threaten that one. And that's the most common image you'll see in the media, but it's certainly not the only thing that's available out there. And there are a lot of people who live in sort of households with or have relationships that are a bit unlabelable, that it's a bit hard to identify exactly what it is.
There'd be a lot of communication and negotiation going on with that.
You are not wrong. You hit the nail on the head. We say that the poly mantra is communicate, communicate, communicate. And when all else fails, communicate.
But is there an issue around that people struggle with around jealousy?
Yes. Jealousy is one of the biggest things that comes up. And when in the courses that I and my business partner run with Your Relationship Tool Belt, jealousy is one of the big issues that we cover.
And you cover it. How do people get over that?
So jealousy is often, or a lot of things are often lumped under the umbrella term of jealousy. It can be insecurity, like you're going to leave me for them, or it might be I'm not as good, I'm not as pretty or rich or intelligent as them, or it might be I'm bored when you're out and I don't know what to do with myself. Or it might be you're having fun and I'm stuck home with the kids. You know, there's a whole bunch of different things that tend to get lumped under jealousy. So what we encourage people to do is to break it down. And when you break it down into its component parts, it's much, much, much more addressable.
That's fascinating, actually. I mean, it's because I think it's fair to say that it would be one of the hardest parts. And suddenly when you break it down like that, it's like, oh, of course. And I think even without outside of a polyamorous relationship, that's just great advice, I think, across the board.
Look, we have people who've been to our courses who are recommending their monogamous friends come just for the relationship skills involved. I think the big difference between how we deal with it and how the monogamous world deals with it is that in monogamy, jealousy is almost encouraged. People see it as a sign of love. You know, if you're not jealous, then you don't really love me. We take a different tack. We say that my jealous feelings are my responsibility to manage.
So we kind of touched on it, but what different structures do polyamorous relationships take?
Yeah. So as I said, you'll often see the media presented as a primary couple who have other secondary, less important relationships. But that is only one of so many different kinds of structures. You can have people living in households. This is not uncommon. Or having multiple kinds of relationships and living close by. People can have... So there's so many different terms. People use fuck buddy, that usually means where the sex is more important, is kind of the focus of the relationship, or friends with benefits, where usually the friendship is the focus of the relationship and it's occasionally sexual. I have a term that I call a lot of people intimates. People that I don't have sex with necessarily, or usually, but with whom I can take off all my clothes and jump into bed naked and cuddle and talk about anything, to a level of intimacy that is generally not acceptable within monogamy.
Yeah.
So there's, if you can think of it, the structure exists in polyamory pretty much. There's polyfidelity. Like I said, that's kind of like group marriage. There are triads where everybody engages with each other, or quads. There's a V where if I'm in relationship with two people or are not in relationship with each other, that can be a V.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every Thursday evening from 8 till 9. And we're talking to Miss Hunter.
Miss, please.
Oh, sorry. I meant to that meant to be a Miss, and then it came out came out incorrectly. Though I'm sure that's, again, a whole other conversation where that one can go down, because we are talking about polyamory. And we wanted to ask about GLBTI relationships, mm-hmm. and how often that's, I guess we could say that some people would say that the standard already for some people in the GLBTI world is polyamory in a sense. So
yeah, well, it's interesting that in the polyvic community, one of the groups that is the least represented is gay males. And I think that's because there's so much gay male culture that is already non-monogamous that they don't need us. But we have every other colour of the rainbow strongly represented, and there's a big overlap in particular with bisexuality.
I've got to tell you a funny story about that. I was discussing with a gay male friend about a friend who's in a polyamorous relationship, and we were at a table and I was using salt and pepper, and these are the primary ones, and I had the secondary ones, and I said, now this one doesn't sleep with this one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he starts telling me about his open relationship, and we had to get condiments from the next table because we ran out of salt and pepper and everything else.
So I've gotten people to do this at times where you start with yourself and you draw the relationships that are most important to you. I've done this with me. And then the relationships that are most important to them, and you're already nearly off the page. And then you get beyond that and you're definitely off the page. It's just, it gets very complicated very quickly.
It sounds to me like you could have a 6 degrees of separation.
One degree of separation, usually in the poly community. Yeah.
Are there a lot of people who would identify as bisexual?
Yeah, there are. In fact, we developed the poly community. We jumped off what was then Bi Victoria. It became apparent that there was a need for a poly group specifically, and there was a thriving Bi Victoria at the time, and so we kind of bounced off the back of them. But you don't have to be, obviously, any particular kind of orientation or identity to be polyamorous.
Do people have I guess we talked about this earlier, but are there many people with a spirituality that...
That's
in the group?
Fascinating question. So what we do have, as you know, I'm sure many GLBTI people have experienced hostility from faith communities, and that there's some pain around that. So there's a bit of that in our community as well. But we have, what surprises me is the percentage of people in our community anyway who come from faith backgrounds and have a strong sense of spirituality. Now, they may not necessarily identify with a particular religion, but there's a lot of people who consider themselves quite spiritual.
And yet are not accepted in mainstream churches?
Well, they're accepted in, like, pagan churches, yeah. Obviously. Pagan groups and Wiccan groups are, you know, very welcoming of polyamory. But the traditional religions aren't. And it's rare to find a church. It has happened that I've spoken at a church about polyamory, but it's fairly rare that they're
welcoming. Tell us about that story. I know you can't identify the church, but yeah. How were you received there? And
really well. I was invited by a listening group that had was set up to just hear the stories of people who felt marginalised by the church, and I was invited to speak, and they were lovely. They were so welcoming and interested. This was in 2008, and I reckon that's the first church in Australia that has done that, that has invited anybody to speak formally about polyamory. And they had all the same questions that everybody else has, and interestingly, one of them noticed as we were speaking that a neighbour that she had a sort of a slightly more than standard neighbourly relationship with them. And we were just talking about the arbitrary boundaries that are set on labels and different kinds of relationships, and how people's experience transgresses or steps over those all the time.
But it seems to me that you face the same problems we do in our community, is that everyone is so focused on sex.
Yes.
They don't look beyond that to who we are, and that's only a small part of what we do.
That is so true. Polyamorists are like the people next door. We have jobs and
they probably
have kids.
Are the people next door.
They very quite likely are the people next door.
Everyone's rushing over to their neighbours now.
On both sides, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you know, those footsteps you hear at night, you know. But, yeah, people do all think about the sex, and I think that's because sex is such a big taboo in our world. And it's so negative, you know, it's such a sex-negative society that people are just desperately curious about it.
I think in religions too, my theory is that if religious people started accepting that sex is a wonderful gift,
yes.
instead of trying to suppress it, and so you can only have sex at this point, and actually enjoy straight sex, they won't have these hang-ups about anyone who decides to do something different.
Yeah, I think... I mean, as we all know, sex can be a profoundly spiritual experience. And I think letting go of the need to restrict it and restrain it. I think sometimes people feel the need to restrain it because it's so powerful. And it, you know, that kind of deep joy can really change stuff.
And we're talking to Anne Hunter, and we're going to be...
Our second guest tonight is a minister with Metropolitan Community Church who recently came out as polyamorist. Welcome to the Spirit Lounge, Diane.
It's good to be here.
We wanted to begin by asking, what is polyamory?
Well, I think that polyamory is... I would define it as the capacity of loving more than one person. Not having a finite understanding of love, but having an understanding that you can love many people and in many different ways. And so that monogamy is one route to having a relationship, but you can have a relationship with more than one person as well. So... I think polyamory is really, it's just about loving more than one person. We have covenant relationships with more than one person.
Di, how did the current relationship start, and what structure did it take in the early stages?
I was single and a woman who I knew and had known for a long time, but we hadn't gotten together ever because of the role of the job I had been in. Well, my job changed, and so that situation changed. And we essentially reconnected when we were both guest speakers at a conference, and started to communicate again. And she said, would you be interested in going out? And, oh, by the way, I'm polyamorous. And I said, well, that's absolutely fine, not a problem, and I would love to go out. And so at that point, essentially she needed to check with her partner, her current partner, to make sure that she felt okay about that, and that they had negotiated, you know, they have their own contract, their own covenant about what that looks like. And then we started seeing each other, and so it's a negotiation so that we have our covenant about what our relationship looks like. And she has another relationship where she has a covenant about how that looks like, what that looks like. And there's the way that it keeps going is we communicate a lot about how the different relationships interact.
Can I ask, you use the term contract. Do you mean that figuratively, in the way, let's say, that two people are dating, have an unwritten contract, or do we mean quite literally in the same way as a marriage contract?
No, I'm talking about a covenant. We have promises. You know, we say, okay, so if you're going to go out with somebody else, we talk about it. And we agree or don't agree. This is how much time we need together to be able to maintain our relationship. So this much time is needed. And then we talk about if I want to go out with somebody else, that I would talk to her first and make sure it was okay with her. It's just we have a covenant about that. So our relationship is a complete unit within itself, so that we have our own promises that we have with one another and for us, because we're both people of faith with God. And she has another relationship with someone else with a similar covenant.
That relationship has changed recently. So what structure do you see it taking in the future?
I think that the relationship will continue to be polyamorous because we both would identify as polyamorous. And so we will likely continue to be very committed to one another and have a life together. And that we would build on that life, and if either one of us wants to see another person, we would talk to each other about it. You know, when I said I was single, I am single, but I do have other covenantal relationships. So that I have friends who I consider family, that I have promises that I keep with them, and that I have covenant relationships with them, that we are there for each other, that we talk to each other regularly, that we maintain and try and see each other whenever possible. And those are a small group of people that I love dearly. I love them with, all my heart. We may not be sexually intimate, and in fact we're not, but in every other way, there's a great deal of intimacy. And so I think that when we talk about polyamory, people tend to focus on the sex, and it's not always about that. You know, sex is a piece of it. It's about love. And I'm sure that you understand that you can love more than one person. I think about parents and children, and I think about, families, where you love one another. And in our community, we talk about loving one another and having families of choice. So I have a family of choice, of people that I love with all my heart. And and would support and do anything in the world for.
Do you think, Di, that you've always been a polyamorous but never actually just labelled it as that?
Yeah, I think that I've always been somebody who, I mean, Joy, you know, as far as my early life, that when I first came out, I was involved with a woman for many, many years who was a casual partner, who we were really dear friends and cared a great deal about each other, but we didn't live together and we didn't want to have the kind of relationships we saw going on around us. So what we had instead was we came together occasionally to make love. But other than that, we mostly operated as friends. Around that, I had sort of serial monogamous relationships, but all the time this one relationship was going on.
On Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and that was a conversation we were having with Diane Fisher. Now we're going to have a song by Mary.
You're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every evening from 8 till 9. Every Thursday from 8 till 9. Wow, that would be a dream. And we're talking to Diane Fisher about polyamory, and that we will continue that interview now. Is jealousy an issue in polyamory?
I think that jealousy is an issue all around in society, not specifically just to polyamory. So I think that the thing about polyamory is we acknowledge it and work really hard to be open to understanding it in different ways, whereas I think in other types and styles of relationships, we have people that deal with jealousy in very different ways, where it's not open or as honest as we are with it. You know, I think that we talk a lot about it. And yeah, there is some, I think that there can be some jealousy if you're not sure about your love with your partner. But if you believe that you can love one more than one person, and they believe that they can love more than one person, you've got to acknowledge then that when either one of you do, there's going to be a twinge, but you talk it through.
Do you think lack of self-esteem in people would cause jealousy more so?
Well, I think that for all of us, we have those places where we're vulnerable and where we have angst about who we are. And so, yeah, those places of low self-esteem would certainly cause that, an increase in feeling not lovable or something. But I think if you, when you get to be mature, you've sort of worked those things through and you're used to your bumps and warts and those places that aren't perfect, and you just, I know for me, I just sort of, oh well, this is who I am, and I feel comfortable with it at this point. I think that what's unusual is that I know a lot of men that are in open relationships where they have certainly more than one partner, and it's more unusual for women.
Have you had any negative press about being polyamorous?
I don't talk about it a lot. You know, I think that what I've done is I've kept it pretty pretty quiet. I've kept all of my relationships pretty quiet. It's not something that that I share a lot about. I would say that I did very little sharing since I've been a pastor of what's going on in my personal life.
But sometimes people tend to find out these things, don't they?
Well, they've found out all sorts of things about me that they haven't particularly liked. Over the years, people, I think I've gotten more bad press about choosing to be a Christian and a lesbian than I have about this. And I've gotten You know, when I went to the World Council of Churches and MCC did a presentation on sexuality, the thing that people wanted to talk about, because the room was packed from all around, it was packed, and people were coming, one, because they wanted to talk openly at the World Council of Churches about sexuality, because we've kept it so far away from our faith. And I think that what they wanted to talk about was, what are you doing about polyamory? I was amazed, and I think that they expected that MCC would have gotten farther than it has around accepting easily all kinds of covenantal relationships.
So they weren't talking about what are you doing to get rid of it, but what are you doing to accept it?
Exactly.
Wow.
Oh, well, that's positive.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like this is a gay thing, and it's not like it's our only thing. I think that it takes a lot of work to do this, but I think it also takes a lot of honesty. And, there's nothing, you know, I'm certainly not ashamed of this. My daughter is fine with it. And I think that in some ways, that when you look at a lot of relationships, we have a lot of serial monogamy, where if maybe we had chosen polyamory, we could have worked those issues through rather than have serial monogamy.
So as LGBTI people, as you've hinted at a little, there are scriptural verses used to condemn us. And do you see that coming, obviously, in this last case, but do you otherwise see such sort of religious texts being then used against polyamorists?
Well, if you wander through the Old Testament... I think that it's all about... It was all about polyamory. It was all about... extended families. It was all about relationships that certainly don't look anything like the monogamy that we hold up as the pinnacle of normalcy today. If you think about God, even in Christian tradition, we don't talk about a God in two persons. We talk about even God, there was three of that. You know, it was
that
Trinity.
That was
so tough. If you look at how we've structured our faith, even that... you know, it's about relationship and it's about love. And we get so caught up in trying to judge each other instead of just celebrate the love. If we could just let people love the way they want to love and put all this energy into things that really matter, I think it would be a better world. So, you know, I don't expect people to love the way I love or to love who I love. I just expect people to allow me to love.
What advice would you give someone who was looking at forming a polyamorous relationship?
I would say that there's a couple of things you really need to do. Is you need to be honest, because honesty is critical in this. You need to know that it's not the answer to everything. And that there's a lot of different ways of doing polyamory, that there's not just one right way, to understand that it's a covenant nonetheless, that if you are loving somebody, you're going to make those same kind of promises that you would in any relationship. So the big thing is communication. You've got to be able to communicate. And be honest.
Well, thank you so much, Di, for talking to us about polyamory. And you're on
it's
Spirit.
It's been a joy.
And you're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
And you are listening to Spirit Lounge. Anne, any comment about that interview?
Oh, yeah, a lot of things you would have observed. I was nodding a lot to quite a lot of that. I think in particular it's interesting. For me, the journey into polyamory was a journey that came out of my Christian experience of and commitment to love. and to, you know, to really loving people wholeheartedly, I found that the barriers that we put on relationships, the arbitrary labels that we give things, don't fit my experience. And as I, the more that I was genuinely committed to loving my neighbour as myself, the more that took me into polyamory.
We had a message, they didn't give their name, but they want to hear more about the intersection of GLBTI community. But I think in many ways Diane has sort of answered that in the interview.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I was thinking about that is that whenever you challenge any norm or break any boundary, that's hard work, and then you are more likely to be more able to consider other boundaries and other norms. So it is not uncommon for people to perhaps come to their orientation identity first and then move into a different kind of relationship structure. We certainly have people who do it the other way around, people who come in thinking of themselves, identifying as heterosexual, and discover as they break the monogamous boundary, then they start to look at other aspects of their sexuality and sexual expression and discover a bisexuality or my partner uses the word bisensual, an ability to melt the boundaries a fair bit around that. So I think that's part of it. And I know that the GL movement in the 70s, the 60s and 70s, actually promoted multiple forms of relationship structure or allowing people to have their own relationship structure in various places and various forms. And I know that, for example, I've been told that the lesbian movement in the 70s and 80s, polyamory was quite a big thing then. Apparently, this is in Melbourne and Adelaide, I think, I was told. Yeah. So there's been quite an overlap with the GLBTI community and multiple ethical relationships, even though the word wasn't around until 1990.
Do you have groups of lesbians that are part of polyamory?
Yeah, we do. Yes.
Don't identify as bi or...
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. No, we have definitely people who identify as bi, and as lesbian, I mean. And we do have some gay males, but just they're very much fewer than the normal population, I suppose you would say.
What sort of events do you hold at Polyvic?
Polyvic has two regular monthly events. They have a social on the last, not the fourth, the last Sunday of each month, which is just a get together and hang out over a meal and a drink. And they have a discussion group, which is a much more structured event with guidelines for keeping the space safe, for discussing all the things that come up in polyamory. The discussion group's on the second Tuesday, the social's the last Sunday, and they're both at Palookaville in Brunswick Street.
Okay. And anyone's invited to?
Yes, everybody is welcome.
Wow. Are there certain guidelines that people need to adhere to? I mean, you can't sort of have a free-for-all and...
Yeah, one of the things that happens is that people turn up and they see us all being affectionate and they don't realise the amount of work that has gone into building up the relationships that sustain that level of affection. And so sometimes it can look to a newcomer like a free-for-all and they kind of don't quite realise...
Now, we're not talking about everyone having sex. We're talking about hugging each
intimate,
other.
Intimate, yeah. Hugging and kissing and holding hands and cuddling and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People think it's emotional swinging. Suddenly.
Yeah, yeah. And so something that we're working on is a culture of consent where you ask before you make physical contact with somebody.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And I imagine it'd be a culture of respect too.
That's the aim. That is definitely the aim. Doesn't always come off like that, but that's certainly the aim.
You also run courses on polyamory, I noticed.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I'm one half of Your Relationship Tool Belt, and we run our flagship course is a 6-week course called Mindful Non-Monogamy. And we cover a lot of the things that come up, like jealousy, as I said, is a big one, but things like coming out, managing differing needs and conflict, interacting with your partner's other lovers. Things like that. Some of the things that we cover in our six-week course.
And how to communicate, like with your partner?
Yes, communication skills, identifying what's going on and learning how to be responsible, how to communicate it well and effectively and gently and firmly. How to set boundaries. Boundaries is a big one. How to negotiate.
Now, you've come out to your family.
Oh, yes, very much
so. And how did they accept that?
Beautifully, actually. By the time I got around to telling my parents, my dad had already worked it out, and he, being the lovely person that he is, just waited until I told him. My mum took a bit longer to come at the idea. Dad wanted to ask me a bunch of questions to make sure I was safe and I was okay, I wasn't getting ripped off. Once he was okay with that, then he's been beautifully supportive. Mum took a little bit longer, but she's, as I like to tell people, my mum sewed the banner that we marched to with in Pride March. So, you know, that's pretty good, I reckon. It doesn't get much better than that.
Definitely.
But I imagine not everyone would have wonderful stories like that as in our community.
Not at all. Coming out is as much of an issue for poly people as it has ever been for other queer people.
Does PolyVic have a support service for families and friends of poly people to help understand?
Melbourne Poly Tribe is a great resource for poly families. They hold monthly poly picnics, and you can find them on Facebook, Melbourne Poly Tribe. They're really good.
I love poly picnics. Yeah. that's fabulous.
Well, we have a big annual there's a big annual one in January where the bi community and the poly community have a combined picnic, and it's really fun.
Now, it does sound fun.
If you want more information on events, you can go to polyvic.org.au. And if you want to learn more about the courses that Anne, one half of Anne, who's the other half?
Tathra Street's my business partner. Yeah.
Right. Run it. It's one word, yourrelationshiptoolbelt.com. And we're going to put up links for those two websites on our social media page.
And you've been listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we're at the end of another show.
I know, it's sad, isn't it?
It is
sad. It always goes so fast.
Yeah, and I want to say thank you so much for coming and joining us.
You're very welcome. It's been a delight.
And it's been wonderful to learn a lot more about polyamory.
I love getting education here. It's wonderful.
We always do get educated here, don't we? We learn lots of things. So we'll put up links on our social media page tomorrow, and you'll be able to do that. Also, the podcast of the show will be up by the weekend, end of the weekend, I hope. And this has been Spirit Lounge. Good night from Rev Joy.
Good night from Tal.
And good night from Rachel.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.